Mr. Escuela, are you here?
Yes, sir.
Is your network proper today?
Yes, it's proper today.
Okay, all right. Oh, let's hope sweetheart has assisted you today to be proper in terms of your network, because you are relying on sweetheart. We heard you shouting, sweetheart. Come on, why not sweetheart? Sweetheart, come with me, Browning, sweetheart.
Today, Chairperson, you are the one who's energetic. You're eating a lot of sweets.
Hi, look. You think I can outsource that responsibility of eating too much sweets to you? I'm contesting that thing. Yo, yes. Honorable members, it's 7 minutes past six. And today we expect to have a presentation from the department. You are starting to look like Osama bin Laden, a whip, please, ne? You must be proper, shave your head, we are going to scare us. Yeah? What is this thing of yours now? Of? Yes? Yeah, you are even disturbing me, I'm disturbed. Yeah. So, honorable members, today we expecting to get a brief from the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. It's annual report and the ARF as well. And then after that, we'll engage with the report and close our meeting. Mr. Escuela, do we have quorum?
Yes, Chairperson, we do have a quorum, Chair.
Okay, we have a quorum, right? Okay. Honorable members, all of us, I trust that we received the agenda of the meeting for today. But for the benefit of everyone else who has not, the first point on our agenda is opening and welcoming, apologies, adoption of the agenda, briefing by the Department of International Relations and Cooperation on its annual report for the 2019-2020 financial year, briefing by the ARF Fund or African Renaissance Fund on its annual report for 2019-2020 financial year, and the last point would be the closure. Can we move for the adoption of the agenda, honorable members?
I move for the adoption of the agenda.
Okay, can I get a second, Honorable Nkosi? I see your hand is up.
Second, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, honorable members. I wish to welcome you all to this meeting. And the department led by the DG, members of the public present here today, our team, Parliament, International Relations, we welcome, I welcome all of you. We come together in the midst of a litany of international developments which have a bearing on South Africa's foreign policy. from the presidential elections in the US, elections in Tanzania, elections in Cote d'Ivoire, Burkina Faso, and with others to follow towards the end of the year. Interesting developments have emerged in the first world, where rigging and vote stealing was claimed, and this was not in an African country where these so-called old democracies believe it is a norm in Africa that a defeated candidate is bound to contest elections. We will have a time to deal with these issues later on, not withstanding bad publicity, about one of our own. We take note and appreciate the fact that Consul General Sunduza in the South African office in Los Angeles is making an early impact on the arrival in that part of the world. We applaud her for having been unanimously nominated by the LA Area Chamber of Commerce to the position of 2021 Vice Chair and 2022 Chair of the Diplomatic and Commercial Officers Group, South Africa and indeed Africa will benefit from her role and energetic search for effective avenues to enhance economic diplomacy, which is much desired to address the triple challenges facing this country. The incoming leaders are carefully nominated to ensure that prestige and momentum of the group initiative continue. We look forward to her leadership on behalf of our country, South Africa, in the coming year. Honorable members, the annual reports are a very important yardstick of the performance trajectory of the department. It is a strong monitoring tool which shows whether the department is taking into consideration the oversight interventions of the portfolio committee and the audit outcomes of the Auditor General. It demonstrates whether the department is improving its performance. In our meeting of the 9th of October 2019 with the Audit and Risk Committee, NAG, it was identified that the root cause for the qualified opinion was the non-implementation of the audit action plan. There was not much ground covered to redress the situation. Inadequate capacity in the finance branch was identified as a serious concern. The audit findings on cash and cash equivalents were found to be because of lack of required capacity in the finance branch. Basic accounting required to reconcile what is in the cash book and what was in the bank statements was lacking by both the corporate services managers in the missions and branch finance at the head or headquarters. Honorable members, this was another pointer of lack of capacity in the finance branch. The committee recommended a skills audit process in the finance branch. It also became apparent to the committee that recurring operational challenges evolve around the finance branch. There were continuous signs of lack of knowledge, poor performance, and lack of necessary skills. The CFO expressed a view that he did not agree with some of the findings in the report of the Auditor General of the 2018-2019. The committee was dismayed how then he would assist the department to turn around the root causes of the operational challenges. It inspired in the same meeting that some contracts with service providers were irregularly awarded. One such is bandwidth contract provided by the BT Communications for which the CFO was charged but not found guilty. The question then becomes, what is to happen with that irregular awarded contract. It has been noted that the majority of irregular expenditure was caused by contracts that were extended or varied without approval from National Treasury. It was identified in the same meeting that issues with cash and cash equivalents were picked up from 2013-2014. The challenges with asset register were also experienced in 2013-2014. The submission of financial statements with misstatements were identified in 2013-2014. Asset register, and by coincidence, the CFO also stated or started to act in that office in 2013. Honorable members, in our meeting of 30 October 2019, the CFO explained to the committee that the challenges with cash and cash was that it had capacity constraints in HIS branch. It was pointed to the fact that corporate services managers who deal with finances of missions are sent to this branch when they arrive back to DERCO, and they often lack the necessary skills. However, we noted that the branch had not yet trained the officials as required. This was also highlighted in the report of the AG that the finance branch needs to be capacitated and trained. Honorable members, the CFO challenged the findings of the AG on New York pilot project in that same meeting. We wish to remind the department to pay attention to our recommendations in the oversight report on the New York project. We expect to get a full report on the misrepresentation by the department to us that land was being procured, for which 118 million had already been paid. The finance branch is again contributing to the root causes of the qualified audit opinion in 2019-2020 on receivables. The lack of capacity in the finance branch again contributed to the negative audit outcome. We take note that National Treasury was advising the department on this issue. Then, this reclassification of 188 million should have been accompanied by a thorough analysis by a competent accountant. It beats logic, honorable members, why the finance branch had to wait for Auditor General to make a finding for such an obvious. This posed a looming risk that the department could have moved to write off the amount. Honorable members, we must commend the department for its consistent and positive outcome on the performance report. It is interesting to note that the difference in the manner the department is managing performance information better than its annual financial statements. The best practices in this area should be emulated to the finance branch. Honorable members, over the 2 years in the UN Security Council, South Africa has handled its membership very well. We further wish them well in their last presidency in December. We hope that President Ramaphosa, as the chair of the AU, is also receiving the necessary support from the department under the stewardship of Minister Naledi Pandor. Then, honorable members, I believe you will be posing questions to the department on how it performs, and having received the report, Sarah, from the AG, this will also enable us to pose the questions after the department has presented its report. Thank you very much, honorable members. Without wasting time, before we start our meeting, I see here that honorable Deputy Minister Alvin Fortes is present in our meeting. Yeah, and everyone else who is present in the meeting, I don't see the minister and the state minister, Mama U. Candice Mashiko. However, honorable members, without wasting time, I will hand over to the DG to lead the team and the report or the presentation rather, also is deemed before us. I also want to suggest that honorable members, we take both presentations at once and then have enough time to deliberate on both presentations afterwards. Thank you very much. DG, the platform is yours. Are you here?
Thank you, honorable chair. Honorable members, TM Puertas, Minister Pando and Deputy Minister Mashiro, Lamini Nascentia, and my colleagues. It is an honor and privilege for us, Chair, to come and brief this committee on the annual report for 2019-20, and we thank you for allowing us the opportunity to brief this honorable committee. With your indulgence, Chair, I would like to give a brief outline of some of highlights of the annual report and be allowed to ask my colleague to deal with the detailed presentation covering both performance and finance reporting, as it is indicated in the PowerPoint presentation, which is actually a summarized report, the annual report. And then on the ARF, we will also request the colleague, Dineo Mashako, of the Secretariat, to do a presentation, and I'll take questions later. Honorable Chair members, as I said, I'll touch briefly on a number of key achievements during the reporting period before going into some specific issues. I must indicate that during this reporting period, the department continued to discharge its mandate of coordinating and implementing South Africa's foreign policy, which is, among others, grounded on the ideals of Pan-Africanism and a commitment to multilateralism, with the AU at its core and as a fundamental principle, the consolidation of the African agenda. Therefore, Africa remains the focal point of our foreign policy, and we continue to do so during the reporting period. And as I said, multilateralism remains a focal point of South Africa's foreign policy, and engagement are premised on the need to advance the priorities reflected in the MDP and the development priorities of all developing countries. Significantly, honorable chair members, South Africa occupied key global leadership positions in the period under review. And in this regard, towards the end of the reporting period, South Africa assumed the chairship of the AU for the year 2020 under the theme Silence in the Guns, creating conducive conditions for Africa's development. This was in addition to and overlapped with our country having been elected to serve on the UN Security Council for a two-year period in its non-permanent membership. Since taking up the non-permanent seat, honorable chair members, South Africa has managed to encourage closer cooperation between the UN Security Council and other regional and sub-regional organizations, particularly the AU. I'm just outlining this as in the annual report, we do have a section that deals generally with this, but I want to go to the main issue of today to indicate that, honorable members, when we look at the performance reporting, honorable members will notice that the achievement rate for the 2019-2020 OFPA target is just 68% of the set target, as compared to 86% of the previous financial year. I will explain that, of course, during this year, there have been circumstances beyond control which made it impossible for us to really achieve all the set targets, especially in view of the fact that the year was an election year. Some of the targets relate to high level visits and engagements. And then in the first 2 months of the financial year, it was elections and transition to the sixth administration. And in the last 2 months of the financial year, there was this outbreak of the virus and ultimately the pandemic status of this virus, which resulted in most of the targets that would have set, which were time-bound, would not have been. And I must acknowledge, as we indicated during our presentation of the new performance plan, that we have had to revise the way we craft targets so that we move from the qualitative way of mentioning number of what, into doing things that can talk to the impact thereof. And this is by way to show, to outline how our performance, as much as our reporting was found to be okay from the AGS point of view, but the actual performance of targets is as I've indicated, but the details will come later. I must indicate that, as the chair alluded already, the audit outcome in respect of performance reporting was found to be useful and reliable with no material findings, thus achieving a qualified opinion for the third consecutive year. With respect to financial reporting, honorable members, we do acknowledge, of course, that we have a qualified audit opinion based on what the chair just alluded to. But I must submit to this honorable committee that it is necessary to acknowledge that there were some milestones that were achieved. And I must thank the committee and the leadership that of the minister and the rest who have really demanded us to improve on what we've reported, and to this effect, and through the leadership, of course, of the management and the CFO in particular, we managed to resolve the recurring qualified opinion on movable asset management, which has happened over a period. And this is history for us, and we want to give credit to those who held us accountable, because you demanded that we should do something about it. And I must indicate that our audit action plan indeed was aimed and targeted on dealing with those matters that affected the audit opinion, while we were not ignoring the rest of the other things. The next milestone was that indeed we were able to resolve the cash and cash equivalent. I must indicate this, that the cash and cash equivalent was resolved as a basis. However, as honorable members may have noticed and realized from the AG's report, indeed, the fact of the matter was that when we reclassified non-cash, we were not able to move further than that, to which we take responsibility and undertake to work. But the details will come as the presentation comes. One other matter that I would like to summarize before they are presented is a matter of unwanted expenditure, which are other matters. It should be noted that this current performance cycle, we have had for the first time a matter raised on unauthorized expenditure, where we overspend on the main divisions of the vote. And as a result, we got unauthorized expenditure resulting from the ceiling. And we have always indicated that we pay our compensation on RSA and allowances. And allowances are paid on foreign exchange. And as a result, the unfavorable exchange rate, as well as the general view that we may be having quite too many missions, etc., among others, could also attribute to the fact that we are not able to sustain this compensation. But already, as we said, that when the ceiling was set, we already had warm bodies, and we do not qualify to to retrench, and as a result, it's a, one of those things that are unavoidable, but which we have done. The next one, wanted expenditure, is the irregular expenditure, which honourable members are very much have always been very much concerned about. I must indicate that indeed we have not yet overcome the challenge of irregular expenditure. Of course, based on the fact that, as it will be known, irregularity is from the source at the time of award. And then whatever you spend on that becomes recorded as irregular expenditure. We did have such, and the services were rendered. And there, as a result, we continue to pay that. And then we, therefore, will incur those. I must indicate to the Honorable Committee that we are doing something about that. And as I speak now, we have terminated those that to be terminated. Some are in the process of being terminated or reaching the end. If we will be able to get it right, the last there is only one last, which means at the time of the reporting year, this was still the case as it was indicated in the report of the AG. But this is one matter that we would like to emphasize that. As honorable members have already indicated. In the previous years, we have done the work of investigation, we have done assessment, but when we put our sequence of actions that we start with dealing with the assets, dealing with cash and moving on to go deeper into consequence management, unfortunately we stopped working physically, and as this is one area that needs physical contact, we, at the time this audit was finished, we had not moved a lot about it, but we are assuring this committee that you will not run away. It's one of the next issues that we'll have to tackle directly, and we'll indeed do that before it becomes further recurring. But we want to assure honorable members that we are on top of the situation for now. We have quantified who is who in the zoo and what should be done. And we will definitely come up with what we should come up and see what we can do about it. And the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, as honorable members will recall, it is incurred as a result of a very unfavorable circumstances. We rent residences for 4 years when an incumbent is there, but due to the unpredictable way in which the successors have to do, you try to avoid market speculation and try to keep on to the property to be utilized, but due to things like delayed security clearances and other related matters, you are not able to take up your posting. Someone is not able to take up one's posting earlier, and then paying that, it becomes fruitless, and this is why it is very challenging for us. But we believe that we will overcome that. I just have to deal with this so that even when they are touched in the main report, honorable members are aware that we really are on course to ensure that as they have encouraged us to improve, we will continue to improve. And this step, of course, we up until the last moment, we had hoped that we have in under control everything. We had hoped that we will surprise you, but unfortunately, on that very matter, that has been a new source of our qualification, we could not do so. May I then request Ms. Laura Scott to just take the committee through the performance reporting part of the report, and the CFO will then take over the finance, and thereafter the secretariat will do the ARF. With your permission, Honorable Chair, may I defer to Mrs. Kotze.
Yes, DG, Kay.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon, Chair, Honourable Members, DG and Deputy Minister Bursas. And slide one that we have, or slide five, just shows us the overall performance, and DG already alluded to the fact that our performance stands at 68. With regards to the vacancy rate, maybe I can go to the next slide, because that is the overall, and let me go into the detail. So with regard to corporate management, All the targets were met except the target that relates to the filling of vacancies. And this could not be met due to the ceiling that was placed on the compensation of employees. So instead of maintaining the national average within 10%, we are currently sitting at a vacancy rate of 12.3% as at 31 March. So we just need to understand that we're talking about the situation as at 31 of March. Then also with regard to performance management or performance development, particularly, HR is also responsible for training, and they have done 35 training programs. This is in addition to the training programs that I will speak to that DTR provides. Then also through our corporate management or HR, we looked at youth development and empowerment initiatives, particularly through the implementation of internship programs, providing our young people an opportunity to gain some work experience. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, in the line with our previous discussions, we have gone a little bit more detail and not only talking about the targets in the APP, but we have given a little bit more information. Like, for example, we don't have a target on the discipline management. However, we are now providing, upon request as received previously from the committee, so we can say that our discipline in the department has been managed in line with the disciplinary code and procedures. And when we get to the next, right at the end, we will then identify some of those. Our grievances is also managed in terms of our grievance procedures. And then in terms of employee health and wellness, we have provided psychosocial support services to 173 officials within a 24-hour turnaround time. And 461 of our officials consulted our on-site clinic for travel, vaccines, and primary health care. So sometimes when you feel a little bit too stressed, you go to the clinic to get your blood pressure measure and so forth. So we have that on-site support for our employees because we consider our employees to be very important. Still with regard to corporate management, our ICT also resides under corporate management. It should be noted that the strategic target was not met, and this relates to the integrated systems that in order to be more effective and efficient. So we have a delay, and that is particularly attributed to the delay in the acquisition of infrastructure, the modernization and imperatives. However, what we would want to bring to the committee's attention is that although we have not achieved the target as set in the APP, some short-term interventions have been achieved, although not targeted for in terms of the departmental APP, but well in the operational plan, such as the acquisition of the Microsoft software licenses, the products and services through the Microsoft agreement, the renewal of the email security license, and this has particularly been a point of concern for the portfolio committee, and as we've raised previously from the committee side around our security, particularly around our information. So we need to then report that we have renewed our email security license. Also, our endpoint security, the antivirus and anti-malware licenses has been procured and updated. With regard to our diplomatic training, research and development, this is one of the areas where we perhaps also they need to indicate that some of our programs were deferred to quarter four, and then due to COVID and the precautionary measures that has been advised by the Department of Public Service and Administration, in March we could not meet all our targets. The training programs offered by the Diplomatic Training, Research and Development refer to our short courses as well as our residential programs for people transferred, for officials transferred abroad. If we go to the next slide, with regard to Diplomatic Training and Development, we also should note that apart from the training for the departmental official, there's also a focus on the training of women, peace and security in order to enhance our agenda with regard to that. We've done capacity building programs on conflict resolution, negotiation and mediation, as well as the dialogue forum, which is a platform used for the sharing of experiences and best practices on women, peace and security issues. It should be noted one of our targets not achieved refers to our policy and research, and this is because the department is currently busy with an internal reorganization and still looking at our structure. So although there were no stakeholder engagements for policy research and policy briefs, alternative ways at the desk levels were engaged in to appraise our principles of unfolding foreign policy development. If we go to the Office of the Chief Operations Officer, for the purposes of the departmental APP, we're looking at our transformation and our programs, and this particularly refers to our gender mainstreaming youth development. So although CARE reported in quarter three that the two interventions that we planned for we didn't deliver on, we need to then take note of what we have delivered. So we're looking at the sexual harassment workshops that were conducted, the forum meeting to celebrate Women's Month, and this is particularly a conversation with our DG and our senior women in senior management. Then also we looked at advancing the youth. A mentorship and job shadowing program was held during the Take a Girl Child to Work in June 2019. And with regard to disability mainstreaming, stakeholder consultations have been held, and also making sure that the department is in a position to provide an enabling environment and providing devices for our people with disabilities employed in the department. With regard to finance and legal, I'll keep it short because there is a presentation on the financial performance. The one target that we have on the departmental APP relates to the mandatory payment of service providers within 30 days. It should be noted that we've only achieved 83.6% of our payments that were done within the 30 days. With regard to our legal services provided, it should be noted, apart from the legal services on international law and domestic law, the OXLA, the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, is also responsible for the South African Treaty Register, and we currently have registered 3,154 treaties. It is also the custodian of the national reports that South Africa is responsible for in terms of its international obligations. That is our performance with regard to Program 1. That is our administration. If we look at Program 2, which refers to our international relations, this is particularly with regard to bilateral. Once again, we will note that this has been a better performance in terms of our targets that we set. The two areas in terms of trade and investment and Chamber of Commerce, the two reds that we have that were not achieved, once again relate to targets in quarter four. And if we reflect back in terms of the rise of the COVID pandemic, and that is particularly where we have that. So if you can go into detail in terms of our performance with regard to our international relations, the next slide, please. We're looking at, we had a target in our structured bilateral mechanisms and high-level engagements, and this particularly go back to what the Director General indicated, that yes, we have taken note and we had the engagement with the Portfolio Committee with regard to our setting targets where we're not wholly completely in control. Of course, this being the end of the five-year strategic plan 2015-2020, we have reviewed that, but this is in the last time that we will present as this. So what we have is during this reporting period, we had a bi-national commission at head of state level with Health with Nigeria, where our president, the two presidents deliberated on areas of cooperation for political, diplomacy, defense, security, economic, and social issues. And this was also at the time when we had the attacks in South Africa on our foreign national. If we go to the next slide. We're looking at structured mechanisms with the Middle East. We're particularly aimed, amongst others, cooperation and agriculture. If we look at the outcomes documents for South Africa and the Bangladesh Senior Officials Meeting, that is what the SOM stands for, Senior Officials Meeting. When we're looking at the South African Myanmar Senior Officials Meeting, it was a cooperation on the exchange of experience experiences from South Africa's democratic transition. Once again, South Africa has much to share with the world, and that's one of our value propositions that we have. With regard to our Foreign Office consultations with India, we were looking particularly in focus on the reciprocal market access for seasonal fruits to be granted. And also with the strategic dialogue with China, we're looking at support in gaining access to the Chinese market on agriculture. And of course, as we know that we need to focus on economic recovery, so it is important that within our political engagement, we continue to focus on how we can expand our trade and then also our export markets. If we look at the next one, which then looks at our structured mechanisms with the Americas and Europe particularly, this is not exhaustive. The full detail sits in the annual report. We're looking at the South African US Annual Bilateral Forum. This was particularly to look at the development cooperation projects between South Africa and the US. Between South Africa and Cuba, the Joint Cooperation Commission was to look at stronger and deeper economic commercial relations. With regard to South African Lithuanian senior officials, it was to continue and process, finalize the waiver of visas. And then with regard to our bilateral session consultations with Portugal, is to see how we can bring in Portuguese as a second language at schools, and this was particularly in the context of the discussion with basic education. If we then look at the next slide, countries in the Southern Africa region are considered to be important players. So we had 23 high-level engagements with African countries. South Africa, of course, remains seized with issues of conflict and resolution and sustainable peace on the continent. And South Africa continues to play a positive role in the peace processes in the Central African Republic, South Sudan, and Lesotho. In order to conclude, with regard to our bilateral, we also had an engagement with Egypt, and this was particularly, Egypt is also the current chair of the AU, and South Africa had to assume the chair in 2020, so that was one of the engagements we had. The engagement with Equatorial Guinea was to discuss the re-establishment of a bilateral consultative mechanism, and then also, if you go to the next slide, engagement with countries with Asia and Middle East also then looked at the following outcomes. We managed to increase our trade with Qatar, create market access for agricultural products, and the elimination of technical barriers to exports with Vietnam, and a closer cooperation regarding the funding gap for UN peacekeeping missions on the African continent. When we look at economic diplomacy, now I do understand that we cannot have a linear attribution, that because this is what DIRCA does, it necessarily results in our trade figures, but however it should be noted, because our missions are at the forefront, they have the discussion for the removal of trade barriers, they have the discussion to source and see where there is a market for our export promotion, and that is why we usually, in the context of that conversation, this is our trade overview that we currently have. So if we then look at what our missions have done in terms of economic diplomacy, next slide. Thank you. So if we're looking at it, it was particularly South Asia and the Middle East is focused on reducing South Africa's trade deficit. Therefore, there is a continuous effort to promote the export of value-added manufactured goods. Then also further to that, particularly in relation to our priority 3 in the new MTSF, cooperation is also about mining, education, skills, technology, and the blue economy, water and sanitation, sugarcane farming. Then, of course, we should acknowledge that the announcement by the Department of Home Affairs of visa waivers will definitely, contribute to South Africa's tourism promotion efforts. But, of course, this is influenced now by our COVID pandemic and how that impacted international tourism per se. When we're looking at economic diplomacy further, and we're focusing particularly with regard to the United States, next slide. South Africa, the United States still remains one of South Africa's biggest single contributor of development assistance and continues to support the fight against HIV/AIDS. under the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, which is PEPFAR. To date, the Center for Disease Control has committed $13.2 million in funding and $8.4 million in assistance through the Agency for International Development. Following the extensive lobbying by Durco, Canada removed the long-standing restrictions on the sale of South African wine in the province of British Columbia. If we look at our next slide, Western Europe continued to be one of our major partners and providers of development assistance, foreign direct investment, as well as tourism. So our total investment from Europe is estimated around 1.3 trillion. European investors were well represented at the President's second annual investment conference. More than 2,000 European countries are currently operating in South Africa, employing South African, enhancing their skills and investing in the economy. Then also, if we look at the total trade with Europe, reached $740 billion in 2019, which is a 7% increase compared to 2018. In the light of COVID, when we come with our next annual report, we might find that the situation is not the same. Further to that, the Nordic and Baltic countries are very important cooperation partners as well. Scholarships were facilitated, and then we also have Nordic companies that continues to invest in South Africa, and then we also have Finnish companies established operation in South Africa. That then brings us to the end to the bilateral work and our bilateral relations and the impact and also what work has been done. As part of program two, on the next slide, we still have regional integration. Apologies. South Africa and Cuba have a joint technical support program in the area of human settlement. This technical support program was initiated to accelerate the development of human settlement. We also have a South Africa-Cuba agreement on the cooperation in the fields of water resource management and water supply. And currently, we have 1,227 South African students studying medicine in Cuba. And we have 695 that were expected to return in July 2020. With regard to regional integration in SADC, particularly, once again, this non-achievement that we have reflect, again, our target setting where it is outside our control. So if the secretariat does not call the meeting, then we have done the preparatory work, but because we have the behest of them, of course, that has since been improved. So if we look in detail on the next slide in terms of SADC, South Africa contributed to regional peace. With regard to consolidation of regional democracy, we actively participated in electoral observer missions to Botswana, Malawi, Madagascar, Mauritius, Mozambique, and Namibia. With regard to the regional indicative strategic development plan, South Africa did submit its country report in February 2020. And then, of course, with regard to our peace initiatives, our president is the SADC facilitator to the Kingdom of Lesotho. If we continue, this, with regard to SADC, we had a Council of Ministers at a virtual meeting in March and noted the recommendations from the extraordinary meeting, the State of Union of Comoros, the annual member state contribution, establishment of a SADC liaison officer and office in Brussels. It approved the budget and it also approved its annual membership contributions. If we continue to the next slide, we had a summit, SADC summit heads of state and government, which focused particularly around the peace issues, Lesotho, DRC, and Madagascar. We also, during that time, President Mozambique was elected as the incoming chairperson, and the President of Botswana as the incoming chairperson of the organ on politics, defense, and security. If we then go to slide and we look at program three, which is our international cooperation, here we will see that we've achieved all our targets. So if we go into detail, and I will highlight just a few of the engagements that we have and what we got out of those. Thank you. As the member of UNESCO Executive Board, we, South Africa, advanced the country's interests on a range of resolutions. We also attended the regular session on Economic and Social Council High-Level Political Forum. It was particularly around the presentation of South Africa's voluntary national report on the SDGs, which we submitted in July last year. Then, with regard to this, on the session of Human Rights Council, because we self-served on the Human Rights Council at that time, South Africa supported 21 resolutions by either voting or joining consensus, and it included resolutions of priority to South Africa. This, of course, is not exhaustive. Access to medicines and vaccines, accelerating the efforts to eliminate all forms of violence against women and girls, the promotion of right to peace, and the mandate of the independent expert on the protection against violence and discrimination based on sexual orientation. So when we continue to engage in our multilateral forum, there are particular issues that informs our policy positions, and as we can see, gender mainstreaming and the rights of women and children is very important. If we go to the next slide, please. This is further to what happened in the 42nd session of the Human Rights Council. If we can continue to the next slide. Then with regard to UNGA, the United Nations General Assembly, that took place last year, there were also key high-level meetings that took place on the margins of this. The national statement delivered by the General Assembly focused on issues related to development, peace and security, and we remain committed to the reform of multilateral institutions. Every time when we have an opportunity, we drive that particular agenda, particularly the reform of the United Security Council. Next slide. South Africa also participated at the UNESCO General Conference, and here South Africa influenced a number of decisions. This was with regard to the approved budget, the adoption of the Global Convention on the Recognition of Higher Education Qualifications, which is very important, seeing that we have students studying abroad, both South African students abroad and foreign students studying in South Africa, because this then aims to support recognition of students that is carried abroad, then facilitating academic mobility for students and education. Also, one of the decisions that we influenced at UNESCO was the reorganization of the International Bureau of Education. If we go to our next slide, with regard to the G20 Leadership Summit, the overall balance of the Osaka leaders was signified a successful G20 summit. So particularly here, we advanced support for Africa and the implementation of the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development, the G20 Partnership with Africa, the Compact with Africa, the G20 Initiative on Industrialization, the continued focus on illicit financial flows, and the commitment to the G20 Initiative on Human Capital Investment for Sustainable Development. Then with regard to the last one, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, this time around we took what we normally would just have given you as a number, just to give you, when we talk about the positions of South Africa at various levels at multilateral bodies. So firstly, we need to understand that you can have your representation at a country level. So, for example, South Africa now serves at the United States Security Council, and this will be where DIRCU is the lead department, so it represents South Africa. The Council of International Maritime Organization, we have the lead department of transport, and the Commission on the Status of Women, the Department of Women. We have a total of those organizations of 18 where South Africa is presented at department level or at a country level. Then we have where we refer to it as an expert level. This is when you're elected based on your application and your expertise, and you serve on various multilateral committees. So although you're South African, you serve there because it's based on your expertise. For example, Professor Claudie serves on the International Law Commission. Dr. Mishlongo serves as the Deputy Executive Secretary of SADC, particularly focused on regional integration. Then we have standing representation. This is permanent or semi-permanent positions, once again, it's at the country level, and we have about 15 of those. Like, for example, Durko is the lead when South Africa is represented at UNGA. National Treasury takes the lead for South Africa at the International Monetary Fund. Then we have appointments which may be supported by the country. This is particularly with regard to candidatures where we would lobby and where a voting takes place as well. For example, Dr. Eddie Maloka is the CEO of the African Peer Review Mechanism. Mr. Thibo Mboweni is the chair of the Board of Governors of the BRICS New Development Bank. And Mr. Maitland is the director of the Africa Division, Department of Political Affairs. And he was seconded there. He is an official on the Durko, working for Durko. If we go to continental cooperation, once again, we will see that we have achieved our target, and I'm going to try to be swift now, Chair, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. If we go to the next slide, here particularly, we look at our role that we played in our presentation at the AU Executive Council and the mid-year coordination session. It used to be a summit, but now it's a coordination session, and it deals with many of the operational issues. Of note here is that this is where the AFCTA was launched last year. If we go to the next slide, during the ordinary session of the Assembly, South Africa, where we look particularly at the institutional reform and the financing of the continental body, the AU, they looked at peace and security on the continent, as well as negotiations for a new cooperation agreement between the African, Caribbean, and specific developing countries. If we continue and we look at the peace and security issues, here they look at the reports that were provided by the technical committees on the peace and state of peace and security on the continent, as well as the AU master roadmap of practical steps to silence the guns. But we also recognize that COVID-19 and the focus on health on the continent particularly derailed that one slightly, but it doesn't mean that South Africa will not continue to be committed on silencing the gun. When we look at South-South cooperation, the BRICS IMC, once again, it's once we've set a target and it's not fully in our control, but with regard to the other structures and organizations, we've met all our targets. If we go to the next slide, we will notice that this is the period where South Africa, we looked at the ACP, and this is where the ACP are looking at the transformation with regard to its Constitutive Act and the post-Cotonou Agreement, as well as interventions that South Africa did at the NAM summit. If we look on the next slide, this was the period when South Africa handed over the chairship of IORA. And of course, there are particularly issues that we want to celebrate. It is our strengthening of the institutional capacity, the new working groups, the enhancement of the legacy of former President Mandela, as well as the deepened engagement with our IORA dialogue partners. If we then go to the BRICS summit particularly, and I'm sure that we have, during our quarterly reports, we came to report on the achievements here. Here we had the signature of the MOU, as well as the adoption of a new architecture on science, technology, and innovation. With regard, if we look at further outcomes of the BRICS summit, on the next slide, the terms of reference that was adopted for the BRICS Energy Research Cooperation Platform, the cooperation on combating terrorism, as well as the establishment of a BRICS Women Business Alliance. With regard to our South-South cooperation, we will once again see that because we were focusing on the engagements with certain formations, it was outside of control, we didn't meet two of our targets. But if we look at our achievements on the next slide, we particularly look at TICAD and the issues that were advanced during that time. It was look at strengthening peace and stability, and there was thematic sessions on science, technology, innovation, human resource development, education for youth. Then if we go to the South Africa EU Political Dialogue Forum, And it was particularly with regard to political and security developments on the African continent. And then, of course, this time sees us reporting also on the FOCAC coordinators meeting. If we go to program four, our first 4.1 refers to our public diplomacy. If we continue to the next slide, of course, we always focus and frame our public diplomacy in the context of the National Development Plan, which calls for the development implementation of a robust, sophisticated public diplomacy strategy. So, of course, the department continued to enhance the understanding of both foreign, on a foreign platform as well as a domestic platform, and our political principles utilize platforms of media briefing, the public participation programs. We had 15 during this time. If we go to the next, we look at the work that has been done for our principles that articulated South Africa's position on international development through well-researched opinion, PDN engagement, as well as media statement and opinion pieces. If we look at the publications on the next slide, public diplomacy also has a further reach in terms of our Ubuntu publications, and we see that we have done our Ubuntu magazines, and the Ubuntu News internal document. And during this period, under the public diplomacy continued to strengthen its working relationship with like-minded institutions such as Grand SA and South African Tourism to collaborate on joint campaigns to promote our country. If we then look at 4.2, we're looking at our state and consular services. The one that we have as a not achieved refers to one engagement with the resident diplomatic corps here in Pretoria, and this was scheduled for quarter four, but due to the COVID outbreak, we also know that some of our missions, well, some of the foreign missions were requested from their host countries to observe certain protocols, so Durko, of course, did not have that diplomatic engagement. If we look at the targets, particularly on the next slide, and we have facilitated 53 provided protocol services for 53 state visits and one for an international visit. Then if we look at our documents legalized, we had 82,644, and this is our walk-in center that we have downstairs at the OFT building. With regard to our consular services for this period under review on the next slide, we're looking at 929 consular services were rendered. It refers particularly to our citizens in distress. Of course, when we come back and we report on quarter one and two to the portfolio committee, our numbers for those will be much higher, particularly our focus on repatriation. But for this period, we had 189, the whereabouts of South African citizens, extraditions, abductions, mortal remains, detainees that we have abroad, and the service of civil processes. If I can quickly go to our governance, and as the Honourable Chair already indicated, they have already received a presentation on or from the Audit Committee and the Risk Committee. So I will then go back next to the next slide. Is that with regard to health and safety, which is also outlined in our annual report, with the advent of COVID, pandemic extra safety measures were implemented. We have the steering committee, and we also have an on-site clinic, as I alluded to a little bit earlier. With regard to part D of the annual report, our particular focus on our human resource development, we will then see there's our vacancy rate for 12.3, and it shows our employment numbers at the different levels. I'm not going to read all of that, and I trust that the honorable members have the presentation. If we go to the next slide, it refers to the annual turnover, meaning that during this period under review, 122 officials either terminated or transferred out of the department, which leaves us with a turnover rate of 5.6. If we go to the next slide, we will then see the reasons why that 122 officials left the department. Some of them are red, some of them are through resignation, some of them were on contract, and some of them were transferring to other public departments. Then if we're looking at the next slide, and we particularly pay attention to the signing of performance agreements, particularly with regard to SMS members as prescribed in the public, in the SMS handbook from the, for the DPSA, we will see that out of the 295, 251 signed performance agreements. Those that did not sign were either within the 3-month period, because once you're employed or you take up a new position within the department, if I do a lateral transfer, I have 3 months within which to draft my performance agreement. And then, of course, it excludes our special advisors as well as our political appointees. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, DG, that brings me to the end of Part A to D, apologies, types of misconduct. And this is the misconduct that I referred to a little bit earlier for the discipline, is that we have allegations of fraud and theft, none during this time, contravention of the PFMA Treasury Regulations 2, where we had disciplinary hearings, gross dishonesty, misrepresentation of facts, and then other. That was the disciplinary cases for misconduct or hearings that were held during this period. Honourable Chair, DG, thank you so much. This brings me to the end of part A to D of the financial report, annual report.
May I request the CFO to proceed with part E?
Thank you, DG, and good evening, Honourable Member and Deputy Minister Boutes. The presentation will focus on the overview of the financial performance under the period that is under review. We can move to the next slide, please. The overview in terms of the financial performance of the department. The department spent 6.3 billion in 1920 financial year, which represents 97% of the adjusted appropriation. When we compare it with the previous year, where we spent 6.3 billion, which shows a lower spending of 1%. But we'll highlight the fact that, which the DG already touched, that in the period under review, managed to achieve the performance information programs in terms of the APP, notwithstanding the challenges that we have encountered in other areas. This was done through a process where the measures were implemented in order to
we can only see your head. We can't see you.
I don't know whether I'm visible, Chair.
Lower your screen down. Up. That's better. Yes, much better. Yeah, that's good.
Thank you.
You are now breaking. You are breaking now, CFO.
No, thank you. Okay, thank you, Chair.
Yeah, you have a network problem now.
Hello, Chair. Am I audible?
Yes, you are audible, but you are breaking.
Okay. I don't know why the network is failing me.
Just try and switch off the video so that we see what when the video is off. Switch off the video. Let's see.
Yeah, I'm in my office. We want to disappoint me. I was on the taking into account the Hello, Chair?
Yes. We are losing you, CFO. We are losing you. Oh, DG, someone must help the CFO with the network. We've lost him now completely.
Yeah.
Is Ms. Bengu in the meeting?
We have lost the CFO completely.
Hello, DJ. Can
you
speak?
Yes.
Back in full force.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, DJ. Thank you, Chair. Sorry for the connection. We have a challenge here in the department in terms of
connectivity.
Okay. Continue. Yeah, as I was indicating, the major challenge that we encounter, which also affects our liquidity in terms of our financial position, in terms of cash, that in the period we exceeded our ceiling on compensation employees by 246 million. In terms of the headcount that is currently employed in the department. In the period which we experienced in the past year, but in the 2019-20 financial year, we exceeded the main division, which is program 2 and 3. Hence, we then record that as unauthorized expenditure, which also affect our surplus at the end of the day in terms of what we need to return to the National Treasury as unspent funds. During the period, we also, as a department that spend in foreign currency, when the rand is not performing well, we then experience foreign exchange rate losses. In the period, we also experience the shortfall in terms of our payment to the SADC as well as AU, which we had to request environment towards the end of the financial year, which we were unable to pay it at once, but we managed to then pay after we have performed the environment of funds as approved by National Treasury. But we want to indicate that this is not something that we wish to find the department in, based on what we represent in terms of the risk associated with not making the full payment when it's due, in terms of our role and responsibility in towards the development of the continent. If we can move to the next slide in terms of the appropriation. So this is the appropriation, the final appropriation that we have prepared. In terms of the budget, we had 6.5 billion. That was the final appropriation. As I indicated already, we spent 6 billion 310 million, and what we remained was 198 million. But within that, as I already reported, that we have then exceeded the compensation of employee ceiling, which then we, then in terms of the spending, we only recorded 198 million. But from the economic classification, that's where we see the impact of the compensation of employees, which we had discussion today in the start plan on how we should then mitigate that going forward. If we can move to the program level, which is program 1 and 2, in terms of the next slide, indicate in terms of the spending under program 1, for the period, we then spent 76% which of the appropriation, which then have a variance of 403 million, which was not spent based on underperforming projects, especially on the payment of capital assets, which is also reported in the previous year. The shortfall, the unspent funds for the previous year was 148 million. Under program 2, which is our international relations program, which talks to what Dolores already indicated in the performance information, this is where the impact of the conversion employees in relation to the transfer staff that are stationed abroad, as well as the support staff in the form of the local recruit personnel that are paid in foreign currency. So in this area, we then exceeded the vote, which I indicated by 244 million, and that would then constitute an authorized expenditure in terms of what was ring-fenced, earmarked in terms of the compensation of employees. If we then move to program 3 and 4 expenditure, the program 3, we also then have a similar trend there, where the final appropriation is 538 million and the actual expenditure recorded for the period was 541 million and the variance was 2,561, which is over the main division, which is basically the foreign
allowances as well as the wages that we then pay to the locally recruited personnel in our multilateral missions. Program 4, which consists of public diplomacy and state protocol services. In this program, the overall performance, we then spend 97%, which basically there was a savings of 9,840,000, which is coming from the number of reduced, as we indicated that the cost-saving measures in terms of the traveling abroad, as well as where the other countries, as DG has indicated, they were the first to encounter the COVID pandemic, and all those planned visits were then subsequently deferred for the future in terms of which we now then revise in the current financial year and the subsequent financial year. Program 5, which is moved, this is our transfer budget where we honor membership to the South African government in its participation in the international forum, which is the main spending, as I indicated, that the environmental funds in terms of honoring the transfer payments to assessment to the SADC as well as the AU, and also the part that I want to mention that in the AU, in terms of the monitoring, the payments in terms of the US dollar amount, our assessment in the past was around about $32 million US dollars. Now it come down to around about $21 million, which we are monitoring through our branch global governance. So if we then look at the whole expenditure analysis, if we move to the slide 71, just to highlight that in terms of program one, we spent 1,294,000 in the 1920 financial year, which represents 76, and the underspending is, as I indicated, is attributable to the capital project in terms of the infrastructure plan that never took off, as well as the refreshment project that we need. We were currently investing to perform in 1920 with relation to our ICT projects. In terms of program two, international relations, as I indicated, overall we spent 3,318,000,000 in 1920, which represents, unfortunately, higher than what we have spent, 108 million, which is attributed to the composition of employee ceiling that has been exceeded. Similarly, this was a lower spending. The department tried to make some intervention in terms of the staggering of posting to mission abroad during the December cycle, which only lowered the impact but didn't really cover the shortfall in terms of the spending that we've already incurred in the period. Also to then balance with the operational requirements in terms of achieving our annual performance plan as already presented by in the part A of our presentation. Then if we move to the next page in terms of the international cooperation, the expenditure for the year, 541 million, which was incurred in 1920, which represents 105%. So 0.5% is basically the conversion of employees, which already alluded to, which amount to 2.6 million, which relates to the exceeding of the conversion of employee ceiling. And the 2019 expenditure is higher as compared to the 18-19 by 3%, which then also includes the expenditure in terms of our work that we've been doing in the United Nations Non-Security Council for the period 19 to 20 in terms of the increase. As I indicated already, the public diplomacy and state protocol, the low spending is as a result of the fact that the BRICS summit was hosted in 2018-19, so this expenditure was not recurring. And the expenditure was basically, budget was found through cost-saving measures. There was no additional money that was paid, put to the department in 18-19 financial year. As I already alluded to the program 5, that indeed one of the areas is the increase in the South African membership contribution to the AU as well as SADC insofar as our foreign exchange rate is concerned. So the payment for this membership fee is compulsory and is paid in foreign currency, which is US dollar denominated. And that caused challenges in terms of meeting the expectations as per the budget that has been prepared. Then I'll move over to the 1920 audit outcome. In terms of the outcome, I can report, which already DJ indicated in his opening remarks, that the two matters that we managed to clear, which was part of our action plan, is the movable, tangible assets in terms of the department producing a credible asset register in terms of the assets that are mainly situated in our mission. So in the past, as we indicated in our action plan, that would migrate the processes to an electronic system, which was then presented from the excess asset register, and we managed to successfully migrate that to the Netrix asset management system. We then managed to produce an asset register that Auditor General found to be credible, but there's still room for improvement in terms of the issue areas that they identify when they went to perform their final audit in terms of certain areas. But the findings that they've identified were not material, as they were not part of the audit report. The second part is the cash and cash equivalent in terms of the qualification that we qualified opinion that we received in the previous year in terms of the cash and cash equivalent. So I just want to indicate, Chairperson, in terms of this particular area of work, we managed to perform reconciliation for the 1920 financial year. Hence, we were able to then isolate the opening balances in terms of what we have been reporting in the cash and cash equivalent in terms of the funds transfer that we pay to service our missions abroad. We are one of the departments that have got many bank accounts, and these bank accounts, they are all managed remotely by missions. So we have not have a system that integrates the work that the finance team should be able to have a view on a regular basis. This is the area that requires improvement in terms of us going forward. But the part that requires further investigation is the closing balances that we carried from the 18-19 financial year. What we have done in a request advice for Malaysian Treasury to then account that outside cash and cash equivalent, because it was non-cash, and we were advised to then report that under receivables, which is basically disallowances and damages, which we were then looking for further investigation. In terms of the accounting, that was considered to be correct, but unfortunately, in terms of the assurance provider that AG need to consider, was not sufficient enough for the AG to then consider that as part of the area that we can express an opinion that will be able to be favorable. So that is the area that still requires work. And in the process, as we indicated, that management concurred with the audit findings and indicated that the recommendation as put forward by the Auditor General will then look into internal controls that have been identified in terms of the deficiencies, which is the next slide, 4.1, sorry, in terms of the deficiencies that were identified, which were attributed to the weakness in the financial internal control relating to foreign cash collection. So in the mission, we do perform a function for Home Affairs in terms of collection all the money that the mission receives in terms of the visas and immigration visas that are within immigration services, as well as civic services in terms of the work that the mission provides for South Africans that are living abroad. So that is the part that we indicated to say the action that we are embarking on is to then review the audit action plan in order to accommodate this part in terms of the control accounts that we manage, the control accounts that we manage under we have receivables in terms of what we should be able to recover before the end of the financial year. And we also have payables in terms of the collection that we receive that we need to pay to National Treasury on behalf of Home Affairs, as well as the services that we then render on behalf of other departments in terms of the advances that we receive that we should be able to service that on an ongoing basis. So the accounting officer has already initiated the process to appoint a forensic investigation in the cash and cash, the amount that we have then separated in order to establish the reasons and what are the weaknesses that we need to then improve. And as part of the strategy, we are currently pursuing the options that are available within the enterprise agreement with Microsoft to see how do we then improve the control environment, especially one of the main challenges that we have and that we experienced during COVID was to receive supporting documents that the mission incurred, that the mission authorized in terms of the daily transaction. Because there was no movement of commercial airline, it was difficult to then mitigate that. So one of the issues is to then look at the document management so that we can be able to minimize in the speed in which we should be able to receive the information, and so that the finance team here can reconcile the records internally so that we then adhere to the deadline for reporting in terms of that area. Then we can move to the next slide in terms of the unauthorized expenditure. As I indicated, that the 246 that was incurred was as a result of the department exceeding its compensation of employee ceiling, and that has contributed in terms of exceeding the main division program 2 and 3 that then constitute the unauthorized expenditure, which we are currently looking at management to see how we then live within the allocated budget in terms of our spending so that we don't find ourselves continue to incur unauthorized expenditure on things that we are not able to develop correct interventions. 5.2, irregular expenditure. The chairperson, we still have challenges on the irregular expenditure in terms of the contracts that were awarded, where irregular process was identified, and that that contract are still continuing, and we have reduced the incentives, but the objective is for us to prevent as a department that we don't have irregular expenditure in terms of how we spend our allocative budget. So the majority of the cases indeed were investigated, and the process is under consideration in terms of how that should be concluded, and the department is also in the process of implementing consequences management for the areas that were not finalized. We can move to the next part, which is basically the fruitless and wasteful expenditure that were recorded in terms of for the period under review was 1,625,000 in the current financial year, which require that we need to put measures in order to avoid incurring expenditure where no gain was attained from the state funds in terms of the accommodation to the head of mission, in terms of the delay that we've encountered, but we will then have to commit to do much better in terms of going forward. The fruitless and wasteful expenditure indeed has decreased, but it's still a concern in terms of say we have not yet have a process where we don't have findings in this area. So in terms of the all the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, they've been assessed in line with the fruitless and wasteful expenditure framework in order to ascertain the liability if there is an allot to pursue the next step in terms of the process of which is detailed in the framework, if it's required that there should be any coordination. So in conclusion, Chair, it's unfortunate that we had hoped that this time around we'll be presenting a report that will mirror the expectations of the portfolio committee in terms of what we had targeted to achieve, and we want to indicate to say this is we did our best, and our best was not sufficient in this period under review. So in closing, the annual report is for the portfolio committee to take note, and also to look at the outcome, the audit, in terms of what we have then received from the Auditor General in terms of the opinion that they have expressed. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, DG, and thank you, DM, and thank you, Honourable Members.
Thank you, Chair. May we request, thank you, CFO, thank you, Chair, and Honourable Members. May we request the ARF, as the Chair's rule, to take the committee through quickly, through now.
Thank you, DG. Good evening, Chairperson. Good evening, Honourable Members. And good evening, DM. Can IT assist with the presentation on the of the slides? Thank you. Today we are presenting the annual report of the ARF for the 19-20 financial year. And I will be starting on slide 4, which gives an overview of the year under review. And the ARF has achieved a consecutive unqualified audit opinion without findings. And during the 19-20 financial year, we processed payments of 63.2 million towards humanitarian assistance, promotion of democracy and good governance, prevention and resolution of conflict, and human resource development. Moving to the next slide, so in these slides, we are just highlighting some of the projects that were undertaken during the year, and the Independent Boundaries Commission, which is a project under the prevention and resolution of conflict. The objective was to provide tangible support to the Intergovernmental Authority on Development-led process in South Sudan within the broader framework of the AU mandated high-level ad hoc committee of South Sudan through the capacitating of key transitional mechanisms established under the revitalized agreement on the resolution of conflict in the Republic of South Sudan. Our support on this peace process through the work of the IGC was considered an essential demonstration of the country's commitment to the AU's conflict prevention and peace building agenda. Moreover, it constitutes a core component of the AU's master roadmap on silencing the guns by 2020. Moving on to the next project, the AIDS Transformation Initiative project in the Central African Republic, also under the same objectives of prevention and resolution of conflict, is to support the prospect of national reconciliation, transitional justice processes, and security sector reform, with various activities carried out. Notably advisory and capacity development support. The objective of the project is currently well on its way towards achieving anticipated outcomes. And also, Honourable Committee, just to mention that through the ARS, South Africa has provided technical assistance to the elections that are taking part in the Central African Republic on the 27th of December. the consignment of the electoral material will depart South Africa tomorrow to arrive in the Central African Republic to enable the country to be able to have a credible election, and the IEC will assist that in providing that particular technical support. The next process, the Lesotho Peace process, I think Ms. Khoza touched on it, that the current president is currently the SADC facilitator for Lesotho, and he has appointed former Deputy Chief Justice to lead the reform process, and South Africa was again asked to continue with the process at the SADC summit that was held in September, and we hope that the outcomes of this process will serve South Africa's national interest due to the proximity of the Kingdom of Lesotho to South Africa. And in the next slide, we continue to support South Africa's component of SADC election observer missions. And as Ms. Khoza has reported, in the year under review, elections were supported in Malawi, Mozambique, Botswana, Mauritius, and Namibia. And these elections were declared free and fair, except in the case of Malawi, where there was a challenge and a re-election was held, and that re-election was then certified free and fair. The next project that we wanted to highlight is the annual Women Dialogue that was held from the 4th to the 8th of November in South Africa, attended by more than 1,000 women from over 55 countries. And in the year 2020-2021, we hope that as the ARF will be supporting more women initiatives across the continent. Moving to the last slide on the overview, that was just to highlight that the drought relief project in Namibia has been completed in 5 regions, giving access to water to many communities and livestock. And moving over to our performance as per our strategic indicators, we have achieved, to promote democracy and good governance, we have achieved 100% of the disbursements as per had been our target through the payments that were processed to the various projects that were supported under that objective. Moving to the next slide, strategic objective to contribute to human resource development. 100% of those disbursements were also achieved. And moving to the next slide, in the year under review, there were no projects to support socioeconomic development and integration. And in the 2020-2021 financial year, we are putting a greater focus on socioeconomic development. So we are hoping to have more projects under that particular objective. And the next objective is to provide humanitarian assistance. The target was achieved as had been set out. And going on to the next slide, to contribute to support cooperation between South Africa and other countries, that target has also been achieved. And moving over to the more operational targets that we had, there were 4 advisory committee meetings planned for the year, and 4 committee meetings were held in that particular year. And the percentage of requests reviewed, 14 of the 17 requests were reviewed, and of the 3 that were outstanding, 2 of the requests were reviewed in the current financial year for the COVID-19 related initiatives, and the competition one is yet to still be reviewed, but should be reviewed in the current financial year. And moving over to the next slide, the percentage of approved disbursements. So all the disbursements that were approved were processed. Moving to the next target, percentage of active projects. So all active projects were monitored for compliance. And moving over to the last indicator, the number of projects that were closed. There were two projects that were closed within this particular financial year. Moving over to the next slide, we are just highlighting the governance structures of the ARF, and all of them held meetings and performed their functions for the financial year. And moving to the next slide, the report of the external auditor. I think the ARF received an unqualified audit opinion without findings, as has been reported. And moving over to the financial reporting for the financial year, the ARF had an appropriation of 46 million, investment income of 63 million from the funds that are sitting in our reserve bank account. And local and foreign assistance of 45 million. And then we had projects that were denominated in foreign currency, which resulted in the book entry of a foreign loss of 44 million. And the surplus for the year was 20 million. And the cash in the ARF bank account at the Reserve Bank as of 31 March was 900 million. Of that, the total commitment to projects was 450 million, which leaves us with a book surplus of 467. But moving over to the next slide, we show that it will be a state surplus of 467. Of that amount, 170 million has already been committed, and 140 million is committed for a loan facility to Cuba, and there's 157 million that is committed to projects that were related to COVID-19, and pledge is made by the president after 31 March, but before the financials were finalized. Therefore, the ARF did not declare a surplus to National Treasury in the current reporting period. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members.